Hello, welcome or welcome back to the Just Eat Normally podcast for eating disorder recovery with me, Dr. Rachel Evans. I am a psychologist, hypnotherapist with a PhD in the psychology of eating and specialist training in eating disorder recovery, as well as personal experience of going through an eating disorder and coming out the other side, which makes me super passionate about what I do. And in every episode, as with my one-to-one clients, I'm bringing you academic knowledge, information, and theories, as well as therapeutic skills and personal experiences, be that mine or experiences of my guests, for a unique perspective on eating disorder recovery. So join me on this podcast as I speak to fellow experts in eating disorder recovery, eating disorder survivors with inspiring stories, and also throw in some bite-sized solo episodes with recovery tips or new ways for you to think about things. The goal of this podcast is to give you food for thought, to shift your mindset, to boost your motivation, and to help you find your own version of normal eating, which will allow you to live a truly nourished life. Hi, welcome back to the podcast. And I'm very excited that we have an international guest today. And she is joining me from Iceland. It was very sunny and blue skies there. And I'm actually going to let her introduce herself because I'm the worst person for saying names. So would you like to go ahead and introduce yourself to everyone? So your name and what you do.
Okay, with pleasure. My name is Rannveig Sigurðardóttir, which is very Icelandic. I'm Icelandic, but currently I'm living in Switzerland. We don't have this nice weather in Iceland for now. I'm currently living in Switzerland. I work here. I'm in the legal field. I work as a lawyer within a company, in-house lawyer. But I also recently wrote a book that is going to be published. It's published now. It's coming out next week, actually. And then I was dealing with eating disorders when I was a teenager and young woman.
You know what? In my brain, I was thinking, I didn't realize it was that sunny in Iceland at this time of year, which it's not. So that makes sense.
I'm working in Switzerland, but I'm very Icelandic.
Yeah. Me and my husband keep saying like every year, oh, we'll go to Iceland like at Christmas, and then we never end up going. So definitely still on my, not vision board, I don't do a vision board, but on my list of places to go. So I'm so excited for you to share your experience with us today. So if you could just start, like, what was your relationship with food and your body like when you were growing up?
Yeah, when I was growing up, I used food a lot for comfort. So I was doing quite a lot of comfort eating. And if I felt bad or if there was anything. But also, I think I was quite early also very conscious of body image and not wanting to be fat, to be following my weight. I mean, I remember being weight, following my weight at the age of 8. I was 8 when there were the first signs of quite an obsessional behavior towards weight and food, probably. But I was a bit chubby, so, and got bullied for that at school. So I had, had a very complicated relationship with my body image and food. When I got a little bit older, I think I had probably a few years where I was very careful of not getting fat. But when I got into teenage years, it was more difficult to control. And I remember gaining suddenly 4 kilos, which I think is like a double in US And I think I somehow started to panic. I tried to lose those kilos desperately, and I remember trying to starve myself and being very obsessed with this extra weight. I wasn't fat at the time. I was probably just like very normal, but these kilos did trigger something, and it led to more obsessional behavior that finally ended up with, my bulimia was born.
That sounds like a, like you say, a really complicated relationship with food, when people say on one hand, I think in society, people are worried about being overweight, or like you say, you're scared of becoming fat, which seems like a bad thing at the time, but then also you're using food for comfort. So it's like, if you're using food for comfort, then maybe you are prone to put on weight. So it's like, that thing is helping me, but it's also, I don't want to say the enemy, that's a bit strong, but it does get confusing then, when you think, well, how do I think about food? How do I think about my body? And like you said, trying to be in control of both. I guess just going back to like one of the first things you said about the comfort eating, like, where do you think that came from?
Probably also a bit of society, know, when you when we feel bad, let's go and have a cake, and when you feel good, let's go and celebrate and have an ice cream. So I guess it's something that people do, and all the time in my family, like other families, so people use food. But I remember my father was traveling quite a lot, and there were candies from abroad kept at home. And I remember, just using that if I didn't feel good eating candy. But yeah, I guess it was just something I got used to. I didn't have anything better. I didn't know any other way to deal with difficult emotions, or when I felt bad, probably, yeah.
Yeah, that definitely makes a lot of sense. You're getting these messages from your family and from society. And I'm just wondering, like, did you have an awareness of like what an eating disorder is at the time? Like, did you realize what was happening to you?
Not when I was like 8 and I was starting to be a bit conscious about my body. I don't think I was then. But yeah, when I was a teenager and this was kind of happening, I knew, but I think I somehow probably thought I would have this under control. And it, I could manage it, but yeah, I think I knew what it was, but I did not realize how bad it could become. I had no idea, no idea.
I think that's quite common. I had bulimia as well. And I think in the beginning I was like, okay, well, this is helping me. Or like you say, you kind of think, oh, it's not that bad, until it then starts to escalate. And for me, really just took over my life. And then I was like, I can't do this anymore, like things need to change. I guess in terms of like the next part of the story, it sounds like it did get worse for you from there. Like, did that impact how you were studying? Did that impact other areas of your life as well?
I'm very interested in addictions, and I've been also studying addictions on the side. I've been taking online courses. For me, bulimia is very much like addiction, and like any other addiction, it slowly took over my life and it became uncontrollable. And I think sometimes we see eating disorders, maybe even teenagers see this, something fascinating in a certain way because you get thin, but I see eating disorders, at least my eating disorder, just like any other addiction. I could just as well have been a heroin addict in a way. Sounds maybe extreme, but that's how I feel. It took over my life. It became uncontrollable, and it made me a different person in a certain way, because when you have this secret on the side that's uncontrollable, one starts lying, hiding, isolating, and not participating in things that do you good. Actually, instead of developing skills that might have done me good and I could have been good at, I just excelled at being bulimic. And that is a regret I have, because it took so many years from me. It did not really affect my studies, I say fortunately, because I think it could be more difficult when you also drop out of school and you get, you know, more difficulties in addiction. In addition, I did well at school, and that was all well, but maybe everything else was not that good. And like I said, I didn't really have a real hobby. I was working a little bit. I was working with school in a restaurant, but I wasn't having any real interest. When I think about this time, I wasn't really, when it was the worst. This was my hobby. This took over my life. And it's just really sad. And I don't think people, I mean, fortunately, people who don't know that would understand how similar that is to a drug addict or someone having a very, very bad addiction to something else.
Yeah, I don't often tend to talk about it in terms of an addiction, but I can definitely see the parallels. Like, I got asked to comment for an article about exercise addiction. So I've kind of been looking more into that and what are addictions. And like you say, often then people end up lying in order to engage in the behavior. People find it very difficult to stop, even when they know the negatives, maybe the impact on like finances, especially for bulimia, if you're consuming a lot of food, impact on relationships, like just all the physical impacts kind of on your health, on your mental well-being, getting quite defensive about the behavior, like you say, if it's for emotion regulation. And then I think the interesting thing is the escalation, or kind of like we were talking about it getting worse, in that it's almost like you need more to get the same high. It's like, oh, that's not working anymore. I used to do it X amount of times a week, but it's not making me feel as good. So now I need to do it more, eat more per episode. And I'm not sure if you experience that. It just feels like you need more to get that same buzz, yeah, almost.
Yeah, but that goes again into my parallel with addiction. Yeah. Like any other addiction, it escalates and it gets really bad, both from the quantity and the episodes. They get when it's worse at my worst, many times per day, every day. And I fell asleep in the evening. I remember falling asleep and I say, tomorrow it's over. Mm-hmm. And you know that you can have, you know, you can die from this. People die from this because you have, your heart suddenly stops due to calcium, you know, meet calcium, whatever. But you can't stop the day after. You maybe hold it through until lunch or 3 o'clock or something. And then you just need your fix. And that's why I see so much similarities with any other addiction. It gets worse and you cannot control it, although you know it's having an extremely bad effect on your health. And you're scared. I was scared. I knew I could die. I was really scared, but I just couldn't stop.
Yeah. And I would just like kind of like to add to that, that it's part of having the eating disorder. Sometimes people think like I'm broken, or it's like a personal failing that you can't just try harder and stop, but doesn't often work like that for most people. Like recovery is a process. I guess for you, I'm just curious, because often people kind of ask me about recovery. I think people want this magic answer where they just stop overnight and then we'll never think about it again. I guess, how was it for you? Was it like reducing frequency of the episodes, or did you kind of stop and then have to manage the thoughts and feelings about it?
Yeah, it took a long time. I think it took a long time to get extremely bad, and it also took a long time to recover from. I did go to a hospital when I was 18, but it wasn't very good because at that time it wasn't specialized, and it just was not, it did help me in a certain way, but it did not make, I mean, it just, well, there I, you know, I was totally clean when I was in the hospital, but I just wasn't eating. I didn't know how to eat. So I just lost weight and I was just afraid of food. And that's also what is interesting, is that after these years of being so sick, you don't know how to eat. And I was just scared. So so it kind of, that was the first part. But then I mean, it started again, but slower, I guess, and less. But I guess it took, I mean, many years, and until I, one day, I remember I was studying in Paris at the time, and I remember, I didn't remember the last episode, didn't remember when it was. It was just kind of gone, and it was such a feeling of freedom. But it took many years, and it, one doctor had told me, you will see there will be less and more space in between. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what happened until it was gone. But I mean, I guess if I would have had better help, better clinic, more adapted, it would not have taken so many years and so much time. From me, I might have recovered faster. I don't know. It really took many, I think, in the all 10, 12 years of my life.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing that. Like, I think there's a lot of just information that there is for people to know about bulimia to recover. And also, like you say, maybe learning new skills. So learning, okay, well, how can I eat in a way that nourishes my body and makes me feel good, but doesn't trigger me? There's like lots of little pieces to that recovery, which it sounds like you picked up as you went along. And yeah, I actually also don't know the day that I stopped binging and purging. It just kind of happened. And I think sometimes it's helpful and motivating that people kind of count the days from when was the last time. But I also think it's still on your mind then. If you're counting, you're still thinking about doing the behavior. So in some ways, that's not helpful. For a lot of people as well. So it sounds like you have accomplished a lot though, even having bulimia and having that take up so much room in your head. Do you feel you were quite motivated to do those other things? So obviously, like, you're doing law now. It sounds like you did some studies before that.
Yeah, no, I studied law later. I mean, I was studying law, actually, yeah. So I've been working as a lawyer and for many years. Now, I think, I mean, it's been like 25 years or something. I have been out of it. I remember, I think, in the beginning, maybe once per year, or twice per year, but lapses, but it isn't, not really. But it does affect me, and it's still, for a long time, I remember I was always afraid it would come back and bite me. Just like I remember I was afraid of getting pregnant. I was afraid, I have a son, and I was really afraid while I was pregnant that it just would, it wasn't there. It was just my emotions of what if it comes back. And so I guess that's one of the reasons I didn't really want to talk about it so much, because I was always afraid it would come and bite me back. But what I've learned, like, now, it probably changed me and changed my life, because unconsciously, I do have a quite a healthy life and quite a healthy, it's not like fighting eating disorder. It's just like, in order to be well, I need a quite unhealthy life. And I know healthy mechanisms to deal with emotions or what does me good. And I know what makes me, which I think it's so important to know what you like and what makes you happy, what makes you, you know, what makes you, what triggers you, just to get those great emotions from things you really like. And also to have a good habit. I mean, do a yoga, a lot of yoga. I meditate. I go to massage. I think massage is something that's extremely helpful. And I eat quite healthy, and it's been my mechanism of just being well, not fighting anything anymore, but just being well.
Yeah, I think if people are listening to this after having recovered, I think it's quite common for people to worry, like, is it really gone?
Yeah.
And you're almost still giving it a lot of power when you do that. But now, like you say, it sounds like you've learned a lot of mechanisms and things to cope, so it's not going to come back. Or even you said during that time that maybe there was one or two lapses per year, it sounds like you thought about that behavior very differently. And I think that kind of switch in mindset I see with my clients is really important, of like, okay, this was a one-off, I can still carry on doing those I'll say healthy behaviors. I don't mean like drinking your green juice healthy, but you know, the things that make you feel good and well. I'm just wondering as well, when you were pregnant, because actually I've had quite a few questions about this recently and we've not done a specific episode. Did you do anything in particular to kind of make sure that the bulimia or the eating disorder didn't come back, or do you think you were in a good place that it didn't come back?
Yeah, I was in a good place, but I was very conscious of not gaining weight, because not by in an obsessive way. I just know that if I would gain weight, it would be a risk, maybe more of a risk if it put me out of balance. So I was just careful of being healthy throughout my pregnancy. So I thought it was great, because everything went extremely well, and I gave birth to my son and I was still fit. And it's just easier, because there are lots of things one has to deal with a small baby. But then in addition to dealing with body images and hormones and all that. So I think at least it helped me just to be in balance. So I just maintained a healthy weight, and I continued doing yoga, and but I was not like consciously avoiding bulimia. It was just I wanted to maintain, be healthy, and in the back of my mind, maybe or unconsciously, just not having anything that would put me out of balance, kind of. Or it's more that. It's more, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So finding your balance. And I think I'd just add on to that, like, for some people, I think some people during pregnancy do gain more weight, even if they were trying to eat, you know, in a healthy way, it just kind of happens. So I suppose for those people, trying to look at how you can manage your thoughts and stop that from being a trigger. Because I think as well, I haven't said this on the podcast, I'm actually pregnant at the minute. Yeah. I'm due in February. I haven't said it too much because I don't want everyone's opinions about you should eat this. Oh, don't eat that. Do this. Don't do that. That I'm like, I feel like social media can be a minefield. I don't know what my point was after that. Yeah, I'm just, there's just so much pressure, isn't there? Like, I've got this app, pregnancy app, and it's like, oh, don't eat too many sweets. And I'm like, F off. I will eat what I want to eat. Obviously, you know, making sure I get enough nutrients, but I don't want to deprive myself of anything. Because for me, I feel like I'm always a little bit opposite to you. For me, if I was going to try and eat healthy, I know you said about balance, so maybe not all healthy, but if I'm like, right, oh, I can't eat chocolate now because I'm pregnant or something, that would make me want it more. And so I'm like, I'm just carry on eating a balance, making sure I get some nutrients, enjoying some cake or like whatever food. So I think it is difficult for people, but it's about probably finding your own balance and what feels good for you, because we would probably do totally different things, but still be recovered.
Exactly. I think I couldn't agree more. I think it's so much to do with what is good for you,
yeah.
What your, but also I 100% agree. I don't think it's good to deprive yourself from what thing. I mean, I totally have my chocolate, my cake, mm-hmm. and you know, it's always a question of balance. Don't deprive yourself in a, because that's definitely not good. Just trying to keep your own balance and find out, because your body tells you so much what it needs and you know what it really, and so yeah, thinking about what is good for you, because we are not all the same, and I think that's very, very important, at least
I think with kids as well, it's like kids are going to have their birthdays, they're going to want some cake, you know, those foods are going to be around. So for me, it's important to work on, well, I think I'm in a good place with my relationship with food, but if I wasn't, it would be important to work on that so that my kids can have a balanced relationship with food as well, and they're not seeing one extreme or the other.
I totally agree. I think it's very, very important to have a, you know, and also know, I mean, although me today, I'm more, I see this as a spectrum. Mm-hmm. I'm getting closer to like a vegan spectrum or vegetarian spectrum. I took for like 2 years ago meat out. Mm-hmm. I wasn't that much of a meat eater really previously. And I just feel that it's very good for me now. I think I'm quite conscious that I think for me, very, you know, plant-based is very good. And I don't want this to be in a such a strict orthodox mm-hmm. way. There are no interdictions or something that's totally off, for because the last thing I want is to be obsessed with what I eat, because I want to enjoy life and do what I like and have a healthy eating habits, but I don't want my to be focusing too much on food, because mm-hmm. it's just a part of life. It's just, you know, and it's more a question of having healthy habits that are good for you, and you're not too much thinking about it. That's how I see it somehow.
Yeah, definitely. Like you say, building those habits, and then you don't have to obsess about the food. Yeah, I guess in terms of like an example of that, I'm not sure if you do the same, but I tend to buy similar things when I go to the shop every week. Like, we'll change it up a bit just so we're not eating literally the same thing for every meal of every week. But then it's just easy for me. I know what cereals I like, so I'm going to buy one of that selection rather than kind of standing in the aisle scrutinizing every box.
Yeah.
That would just take so much time.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. I do it online, doing much of mm-hmm. this. Same list. Yeah.
I never got into online shopping, even when we had lockdowns and stuff. I like walking around the shop and like seeing what new stuff they've got as well. But yeah, so I would love to talk a little bit about your book. I know you said it's coming out in Icelandic first. So if anyone can read Icelandic, this will be applicable to you. But I would just love to know a little bit more, like what inspired you to write it and what is it about?
I had been having on the back of my mind for a long time. I wanted to write, and it's one of the things I've been using maybe to express emotions. Mm-hmm. You know, if I feel a need, you know, that's just one of the things that works for me. But I had never really had the time studying and working and with a baby and my son who's not yet. But during the lockdown, now in COVID, I took up some, you know, something that a draft I had, and I simply started working on it. But it was also, it's very influenced by, I was, you know, also taking online courses in addiction. So it's influenced by addiction, but also by my I mean, some experience in life, people I've known, and it just really felt the right moment, having a little bit more of time, not traveling and not driving back and forward to work. But for me, it was very emotional because I went into the book and I somehow lived, you know, it's very, I thought it was a bit weird to write the story, feel the emotions, although I knew how it was going to end and I knew it was a fiction, but still it was very emotional. So I thought it was kind of a healing in a certain way, deal with, and yeah, that was what inspired me. But it's about you can say it's a love story, but it's much more than a love story. It's a man who falls for a woman who has addiction issues and a past that is not very clear. And they have kind of complicated relationship. One could say toxic from a certain extent. And then there are other family members that get involved. So just things that, or feelings and situations, and then one who has been dealing with either addictions or people dealing with addiction could definitely relate to. But it's a bit wild because they're young and they are very much in love. There's quite a lot of sex as well. One could say sex addiction as well. So it's a bit wild story. I enjoyed reading it, but it's sad and emotional, but I'm very proud because I wanted to do this for such a long time, to write a book, and it's like, okay, that's, you know, I did it and it's out and it's being published. And of course I'm scared. I've never written a book before. I think it's good that, yeah, it's there. At least I tried.
Yeah. Congratulations. That's exciting. And it sounds like a book that people can really connect to the characters. Like, I really like that in a book where you really care what's happening to everyone and you want to know like how it's turning out for them. And yeah, I think it's really important to speak about mental health, whether that's addictions or eating disorders or whatever, in different contexts. Because I think sometimes, hopefully not this podcast, hopefully we're making the podcast engaging. But, you know, if you read like, we have the NHS in England, National Health Service. So if you read their website and it's like, this is bulimia, this is an addiction, it's very dry, it's not really engaging for people, maybe they can't really relate to it. So I think it's important talk about those topics in different places that people might be able to see, oh, that's what's happening for me. Is this not okay? Is this not helping my life? Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I think so. And I think, I mean, I know a friend of mine who has experience from living with someone who had addiction issues. And she told me, for her, it was just like, she could so much relate to it because she said, this is just the way it is. And I thought that was good. So my aim was more just like, if you open a door into people's life and you see that's how it is, without judging or teaching. I mean, it's just like, this is the way it is. You know, this is the, if you want to experience, yeah, kind of, without judging or yeah.
Yeah, I think that can be so powerful though, even sharing experience, because kind of a tangent, but kind of related. I had some anxiety stuff about being pregnant and I was like looking on like the formal websites and it was telling me about it. But then I've never really looked on forums before, but I ended up on like Mumsnet forum and these other forums. And I was hearing other people saying that they felt the same. Yeah. And I was like, oh my gosh, it's not just me. I think some of it might be to do with hormones for me and how that affects your thinking when you're pregnant. But I think even just like you say, having that door open, oh, look, there's other people who are struggling. It doesn't fix the problem, or not always a problem, doesn't fix the situation, but it can help you be more accepting of it or just start to think about it a little bit differently.
I totally agree. And I think that's also what I'm experiencing when I speak about my episode of bulimia. Mm-hmm. I mean, I probably will put bulimia in if I write again into another book. It's strange that I somehow felt it too personal to do this. Mm-hmm. You know, but it's because there is so much shame of having been there. And I felt like, even though, I mean, I'm a lawyer and I have I'm an M&A lawyer. I live in Switzerland. I have a beautiful boy. My life is quite good, but this shame from having these years of being so sick and having a mental illness, that's what it is. And to understand that this was a situation I could not control and that I was sick takes a bit the shame away. And when you speak to other people and you realize, oh, it was the same for them. So it was not me being damaged good, kind of, you know, having this, but it's just, that's how this is when people get, and it's, and it also makes you more open and gives, I think, to if people want to understand what it is, whether it's any other addiction, like the one I'm talking about within my book, or where it's bulimia, think people will judge less if you get a bit of an understanding and you see that it's, people can't help it if they are sick.
Yes, most definitely. I think a lot of the stigma that people might put on others, or the taboo and then shame that people feel, is from lack of understanding. And I think with my clients, we kind of look at the physical factors, we look at the mental factors, and we can see, look, it's not just one thing. And you were saying at the beginning that you had a complicated relationship with food. It's all these little things. And once you can understand that, then yeah, for me as well, that's when we can let go of the shame and think, okay, these things did happen. Mm-hmm. If I was going to choose to do things again, and I was able to have a choice, I would do them differently. But you always don't have that choice at the time. You're just doing the best.
Exactly.
You can.
Exactly. And maybe it's a coping mechanism. It probably is in a situation, and we just don't know any better. And I sometimes think, you know, if it wouldn't have been bulimia, I probably would have done something else. Mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't know better. If I would have the choice, would have had the choice, I would not like to have had this, but that's just the way it is. And I have to accept it. It's a part of me. Mm-hmm. And I am, you know, even though there are many things I can say, I mean, my age today, I can say that, you know, I have achieved, I studied abroad, I've been living abroad, and things have been going well around me. But I think the most difficult thing I've done, and my, in a way, may sound strange, my biggest achievement is getting out of bulimia. It was just so big.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just coming back to something you said earlier as well, I think it makes you more self-reflective when you kind of have gone through this journey that you were saying earlier about finding out the things that you like. And those things, I think it does. I think that self-reflection then often helps you to be more compassionate to other people, or often understand what other people are going through as well. Maybe that's not bulimia, but maybe it is another mental health struggle, because you've kind of been in their shoes. Maybe it's different, but it's similar. So even my younger clients, I feel like they kind of grow up quite a lot through recovery and learn a lot as well. That is really valuable.
No, definitely. There is a, you, I mean, I feel that I understand all addictions in a certain way. And obviously, yeah, it gives you an insight into what many people can be going through, this uncontrollable loss of yourself, which is really what it is in the end.
Yeah. Okay. And last question. So what would you say to someone who came to you and said, I just want to eat normally?
Yeah, what would I say? I guess I would say to that person, I would first ask back, what is normal eating to you? Because it's very personal to, so I think I would try to find, to advise that person to see what what the aim would be, what kind of normal, what is what that person would be looking for in eating normally. But then to, as a general advice, I tend to think that trying to have a I try to eat food for comfort and avoid binge food. Mm-hmm. That's, I think, of it, and try to look at some food, something that does you good, and also in all ways. So if you are either it's because it's healthy and does you good from a healthy perspective, or because it's good because it's super good and it's, you know, it's, you're enjoying eating it. Mm-hmm. But when it's the binge food, it's neither nor. Mm-hmm. It's you're not enjoying it, and it's not so, I guess. And I guess I would say also try to have regular meals and avoid the food that you binged on, I guess I would say. And but I mean, then I'm very much in favor of more plant-based and, you know, little sugar, little wet, those food that are mm-hmm. more like a drug foods. And try to look at food, something that does you good. It's for you, that builds you up, does you good. It's not, you know, that's, and but that doesn't mean you can't have a super good cake. If it's just like very good and you're having a pleasure with it, go mm-hmm. for it. But, you know, try, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's such a good distinction, isn't it? About like any food, let's just use cake for this example. You can have a slice of cake in your house or when you're going for a coffee with a friend or something. And like you say, it's a food, it's enjoyable, but that same food can then turn into a binge food, and then people are probably eating it quickly. You're not enjoying it. There's secrecy and shame probably. So I suppose, I think I work with clients slightly differently. I try and help them stop foods being a trigger food, so they right. could have that at any point. But I think it is sometimes helpful, like you say, for people to avoid them for a while until they feel comfortable with them. But like, what is a binge, I suppose my take home from that, which is slightly different to what you were saying, is as well, what was a binge food can just become a normal food that you can eat.
And totally, it's
like, fine.
I know, totally. I agree. I agree with you. I think in the beginning, it's very important to, at least for me, that's also for me. In the very beginning, it helped me to avoid sugar and bread and really lots of, you know, binge food. But many of the food that I would maybe have considered binge food before are part of, you know, it's not a binge food anymore, but they are still food that, you know, I just avoid, not by forcing myself. I just don't want that because it's just, it doesn't, it's no pleasure. It's just empty. And I just, I kind of avoid it. And I like trying to enjoy what I eat and not, yeah, like I said before, not obsessing about it. But yeah, I think it's definitely, you can take food as being a binge food in the first while and being something you avoid, and you could be back slowly into your alimentation, and it's not that anymore. No, definitely. That's
yeah. And I think the thing is, there are so many possible foods. Okay. Even if people choose not to eat some of them going forwards, you can still live your life and eat enough variety. It doesn't have to feel restrictive. I kind of say there's certain foods as well for me that, because I binged and purged, and then I'm like, this is a bit TMI, but because you're kind of tasting them a second time, I just can't, there's certain things I'm like, no, I just have bad memories associated with that, but it doesn't affect my day-to-day life. It doesn't really bother me not to eat those couple of things.
I definitely agree. I that's also where I'm coming from. There are things they're just gone, and I just don't, you know, they're not a part of my limitation. But I think it's good, I mean, for everybody to try to have like regular meals, sit down, not eat on the run, and look at food, yeah, like something that does you good, either mentally or physically, you know, either it's a real pleasure or it's giving you something. I think that's, I guess,
Yeah, thank you for your advice. So, I guess where can people find you if they want to catch up with you about the book or anything else?
Oh, I'm everywhere. I'm on LinkedIn, Facebook, so all social media. Yeah, I'm Facebook, LinkedIn, and Instagram. I guess the easiest, just connect to me. I would love to. I mean, I would also. I mean, if people want to chat about anything that I was saying, or if it's relay, if it resonates to anybody, I'm more than happy to discuss, because I feel like it's such a big part of my life, so I feel I have something to say, kind of,
Yeah, thank you so much for coming on, and thank you for that offer for people to get in touch. I'll put your links in the show notes.
Okay.
Thank you for listening to the Just Eat Normally podcast. I hope you found this enjoyable, interesting, and insightful and informative. And if you did, make sure to subscribe to hear the next episode. And just remember that you can check out the show notes for contact details and extra resources.